Welcome to episode 10 of the Rebel Army podcast. This week, we're joined by two goalkeeping coaches. We look back on a weekend's fixtures and we look forward to a couple of trips away this weekend. Welcome back to another episode of the Rebel Army podcast. Joined as always by Aaron Howey. How are you?
Not too bad, Stephen. How are you?
Are you tired from all the travelling over the weekend?
Do you know what? Not actually too bad. I had a couple of people onto me because just the weekend that it was the same stadium twice, 2 days in a row, but it's actually fine.
Did you stay up or did you go up and down?
No, I came back down.
Did you?
I got back. I was home at about 1:30-ish Friday night. And then we were on the road again 9 o'clock Saturday morning. But it's not too bad. Dublin isn't too far these days, so it's manageable.
Yeah, it was, I suppose, the big talking point before we start looking at the matches is the fact that you're going to have to get used to those travelling up and down the country for a while.
Yeah, we were kind of waiting to see what was going to happen or what was going to be announced. But yeah, it was confirmed this week that the Longford and the Finn Harps games have been reversed. So we're in Longford on Saturday. So that's on Saturday now instead of Friday. And then next week we're in Finn Harps. Bit of an asterisk next to that one. It's down for a 6 o'clock kickoff because they're having issues with their floodlights. There is a chance it could be moved to 7:45. But for now, it's in the calendar at 6 o'clock next Friday in Ballybuffet.
6 o'clock next week. So
the women's one as well, actually, obviously the DLR game last weekend was supposed to be a home game.
Of course.
That was also confirmed in the same press release that has been reversed. So later on in the season when we were due to play DLR away, that'll be a home game then.
That'll be a home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pity. And you know, we had so much momentum in terms of attendances at the Cross. I suppose it's, you know, it's tough now that we lose a couple of fixtures reversed for a while.
It is, but there's two ways of looking at it. Like later on in the season, we'll hopefully be on a title charge and then you'll have more home games and there'll be more bigger crowds to have at the Cross and hopefully big atmospheres and stuff like that. So there's two ways of looking at it. Yes, it's kind of annoying that we'll have to do a bit more travelling now, but we were going to have to do that travelling anyway. So we get it out of the way early and we get to stay at home a bit more towards the second half of the season. So that's a positive way of looking at it, I suppose.
I suppose the other thing that people would have realised when we put it out our podcast last week, you just know that we're not pre-scripted anyway because we didn't know that.
Yeah,
we didn't know that
was coming. Yeah, we actually, I think I said that we were recording on the Monday and there could be something out. And wouldn't you know, it was that night that there was
and
news
we had
came out.
Recorded already.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a part of me thinking, should you put it in an edit? But you had said it anyway. Yeah. Like, you know, like so.
I think everyone kind of expected something to come anyway. We all saw how things were on the previous Friday. So we expected something. But that's all confirmed now. So at least we know now for the next couple of weeks where we are, where we're going.
And hopefully with a bit of dry weather now. I think the weekend coming, the heat is starting to come. No, when I say heat, don't be getting carried away. Bringing out the shorts and stuff. It's about 16, 17
it's
degrees.
Irish heat,
yeah. And dry. So I think that should hopefully help.
Yeah, that should help massively with how it is. And yeah, let's hope we get back there as soon as possible and get back to filling the Cross and big Friday night atmospheres.
Well, what did they say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So maybe when a full month without any fixtures, would I be right, kind of? Would
be about that, I'd say,
about
that
by the time we get back.
Yeah.
I think people will be hungry for something.
Hopefully everyone will want to go there, yeah.
So it'll probably be after the May weekend at some point.
Yeah, we don't actually have anything, like there's no day on the calendar circle to say we're back on this day or anything yet, but
we just have to take it as it goes.
Take it day by day, I suppose, yeah, and we'll have an update, as same as usual, our social media, our website, as soon as we know it, we'll have a release out there and we'll hopefully know sooner rather than later.
So let's revisit the game away at the UCD. Not much happened really in the game. It was kind of...
Yeah, it was a 0-0 draw. To be honest, not a whole lot really to report from it. A couple of half chances here and there. Another draw, kind of, you know,
not
away
a clean
games.
Sheet, I suppose, as well.
Exactly, you can look like that. It's a clean sheet. A game that Tim would have much preferred we won, a bit like the couple of previous away games. Finn Harps we drew, Wexford we drew. Where else were we? Treaty we drew. So it's, you'd want to start picking up, as you said, there's going to be a lot of away games coming, so we'd like to start winning an away game and getting more than just the 1 point on the board, but I'm sure that'll come as well.
Yeah, but still, I suppose only 2 goals conceded for the whole season.
That's the way to look at it as well. I know it can be frustrating, especially when you travel to games and you're like, oh God, another 0-0 draw, whatever. 2 goals conceded, loads of clean sheets, top of the table, 4 points clear. Like,
yeah.
That's one thing as well. Yes, we only drew on Friday, but Finn Harps lost.
That's right.
So we made up. Like,
so we,
it was
we
a point
gained.
Gained.
Point, like,
exactly, yeah. We gained a bit of ground, so there's that way of looking at it as well, which is obviously much that makes you happier than just accepting a point on the road.
Did you speak to anyone at the match?
Did chat to Tim after the game very briefly. This is what he had to say.
Probably frustrated. Listen, it's results went the other way, so we got another point ahead at the top of the league, but we're probably a little bit disappointed with the game. We thought we looked solid again. It's another clean sheet. we want to try and win games, and I think we made four or five changes. It was four changes in the game. I thought the subs made an impact, and this we really pushed towards the end of the game to try and get a winner. And probably just the final part tonight in the final third, touch got ahead of us, or the wrong decision or execution, shall I say. And listen, we didn't get the win, but a 0-0 against a very good UCD side isn't a bad result.
Yeah, it seems like, I suppose, just listening to Tim there, it's kind of more maybe lacking confidence up front or something, or maybe that finishing touch or something like that.
That was it, yeah. A bit of a frustrated figure, but as he said, like, there were chances. Nathan had a few when he came on, and Jaden and Josh did well, and a few others. Bagsy was good again. We're creating the chances, just finishing the chances in the away games seems to be the sticking point for now. But look, again,
yeah, because the previous week, they were, in fairness, they took the chances. We probably could have even scored more against Cove the previous week.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I thought the momentum you would have thought would have swung with them going into UCD.
Exactly, yeah. And even the previous week, Bagsy, again, since he's come back, has been brilliant. He got two assists, bombing down that right and putting the ball across. Josh came on for him on Friday away to UCD, and he did well again when he came on. So the chances are being created. They're just, it's, if we could start picking up a few more goals away from home, and picking up a few more points as well.
I think someone will get the goal scoring boots on and just take away.
You get a feeling that someone's going to just get a hat-trick some week or something.
Will, I think, at some point.
Hopefully next week or Saturday even.
So you came back down and went back up on Saturday to watch the women's team.
I did. I should have brought my sleeping bag and just stayed up there, I'd say. But yeah, we're back up there Saturday. A different kind of story. Saturday, again, a draw, 1-1 in this one. So there was goals, but Danny was very frustrated after the game. We led 1-0 for a good chunk of the game. Laura Shine scored fairly early on. And there was a couple, again, a bit like the men's game away to Wexford the week previously, there was a couple of sort of half chances that kind of got the sense.
They could have finished the game.
Exactly. And when they weren't, the ball wouldn't go in for the second one. You're kind of thinking, oh, this could come back to bite us here. And it did. DLR got a goal. It came from a throw-in up to that point in the game. They'd started to do well around the goal, but up to that point in the game, like, City dominated, I thought. And finished 1-1. So again, look, it was a point gained on the road, but when you end up getting a point in a 1-1 draw when you've led for most of the game, you're obviously going to be frustrated. But yeah, I spoke to Danny after that one, and this is what he had to say.
We didn't play to the best of our ability in the second half, and we played well in the first half. And look, I think the conditions wasn't great in terms of the weather, like the wind was quite havoc with things at times, but we've got to do a little bit better on the ball. We've got to stay organised and stay in our shape for longer periods at a time, and we can't lose. Lack of concentration at times, you know, we've conceded a goal for throwing, and that's something we can't really do. So, look, it was positives first half. We played really well. We defended really, really well again off set pieces. We limited them to very little. We had a couple of chances in the second half, and the one off the line from the corner, and Laura Shine's chance, and I think you score one of them, like the game, it's a different game, you know. Especially Laura's chance, I know she'd be disappointed herself, but like if she scores that, we'd probably have it's a different game altogether. We'd probably go on to get a few more goals, but we're still improving, still getting better. And it was tough for the younger girls at the back in the second half, because they struggled a little bit with the wind and adjusting to that. But as you said, it's a point on the road, something to keep building on. Three games unbeaten, and we keep developing and keep improving.
You could hear the sense of kind of disappointment in his voice.
Yeah, and you know what? I understand why he was disappointed, but look back to a couple of weeks ago, the result away to Galway, to now being disappointed getting a point on the road.
Yeah, not getting the win, like.
Exactly, yeah. It's a big turnaround. There was a couple of good results since the Galway game, and you were hoping there was a corner was turned. Feels like that has been done.
There's a bit of stability there anyway. No?
Exactly. Yeah. A couple of times over the last couple of years, you might pick up a good result and then you go back to losing 5-6-0 the next week. And that's not happening now, which is, it's a good sign. It's the experienced players that he's brought in have really added to it this year. And it's sort of a different vibe before a game and after a game, which is, it's good.
And the other thing there, they're getting results without playing at home, you know, without a crowd cheering them on.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, that's probably, you know, when they do get back to the cross, that's going to be a big thing for them, you'd imagine.
Exactly, and there's due to be a TV game at the cross as well against Treaty, yeah. Which is obviously the big game and the big rivalry there. So hopefully if we're back and there's a big crowd there, that could be a really big home game. A good result there, a good buzz would just be brilliant.
Give them a burst of confidence.
Exactly. One good thing from the match in the UCD Bowl on Saturday. The kit, it was a debut for the away kit.
I saw that, yeah.
Lovely.
Look well.
Lovely. It looked really good. Not sure when the lads are going to get to wear it. I was looking at the fixture list. I think maybe Bray, because there's a clash. Might be able to wear it against Kerry. I don't know, but we wore the home kit against Kerry already, so we don't have to wear it against Kerry. But yeah, good reaction to that online, which is good. Couple of orders came in after the pictures went up, and I know there was people in the shop in Douglas looking for it as well, so that was good.
Mick was tempted to put it on last week in the second half, but I don't think he was allowed.
Yeah, I think something like that, Cove anyway. Didn't have another kit, so we would have clashed with Cove's home kit. But yeah, hopefully we get that to get that on the lads soon as well, and we get to see that on the pitch.
Speaking of Mick, we got great feedback from last week's podcast.
Brilliant feedback, yeah. Yeah, people really enjoyed it. I actually got a lovely message from Vincent in the Netherlands. So he lived in Cork a couple of years ago and got into Cork City and going to Cork City games, has since gone back to the Netherlands and is now watching all the games on LOI TV, and Brilliant. He's listened to every episode of the podcast, and he said it reignited his love for the club, which is great. So someone's enjoying it.
Hello to Vincent.
Exactly,
anyway.
Yeah. Big shout out to Vincent.
I also saw a picture or a video of someone listening to the podcast in LA.
Yeah.
A coach with LAFC or something.
I think he's the LAFC kit man, and if he's listening to this one, it's a shout out to him there as well. But yeah, it's like, you know, you always hear about the GK Union and the goalkeepers. Mm. That was Mick's episode, so there's obviously a kit man union as well. Where all the kit men know each other.
Their inspiration, and yeah, I just saw it came up. I think it was on
Mick shared the story.
Shared the story, and I was like, where's that?
Yeah.
And next thing is, because it was beautiful sun anyway in the background, it definitely wasn't.
It wasn't here last week, yeah.
And I saw it was in LA, which is brilliant. Just goes to show the podcast is literally going all over the world.
Exactly, yeah. And we've seen that in, you know, the analytics and stuff for the last 2 weeks, but at least now there's proof. Yeah. People are messaging and sending pictures that it is being listened to.
Yeah, but you often forget that point, actually. People might move to Cork for a period of time even. They might come to college here, they might whatever, might get a job here.
Exactly.
And if they're into football, they'll probably take in a couple of games, and then you probably keep in touch with the club from that point on.
Yeah, and stuff like this, like the streams, LOI TV is brilliant because we kind of take it for granted now, but up till a couple of years ago, like if you weren't at the match, you weren't watching it unless it was on TV. So LOI TV is brilliant, stuff like this. The club social medias across the league, men's and women's, have come on tenfold over the last couple of years. So really positive, and it really makes the clubs accessible to people outside of Ireland, and it grows the fan base a bit more, which is only good for the league and only good for the clubs.
How'd the underage get on at the weekend?
Lots of goals this weekend, actually. So on Saturday, the under-20s were in action against Kerry in Bishopstown, and that was a 6-0 win. Harvey Skyters, Jaden Ume, Matthew Murray got two, Ronan O'Shea got one, and Dara Crowley got one. He's back. Great to see him back on the pitch and on the score sheet. Hopefully we see him back in the first team over the next couple of weeks. He's obviously playing with the under-20s to get minutes in. Mm. A vital player for us last year, and we really missed him when he picked up the injury. So great to see that he's recovered well and that he's back on the pitch. The women's 17s didn't have a game on Saturday. They were off this weekend. The men's 15s won 4-0 against Cove Ramblers down in Cove. Morgan Kelleher, Joe Miskala, Rory Fitzgerald, and then the fourth was an own goal from Cove. On Sunday, the women's 19s took on Wexford in Bishopstown and lost 1-0. The men's 17s won 6-0 away to CK United. Evan Pilo, Denzel Obenge, and Jaden O'Donovan got four goals. So,
four?
Yeah, well done, Jaden. That's serious going. The 14s then won 6-2 against Cove up in Mayfield on Sunday as well.
Good results overall.
Yeah, lots of goals and good results.
Lots of goals.
Great work being done in the academy as always.
Maybe the senior team will have to kind of get inspired by the younger players who are banging in the goals.
Exactly, and you know what? Even the younger players in the academy looking up at the likes of Cathal O'Sullivan and Jaden and Matt Murray and stuff, the younger players being involved in the first team, it gives them something to target and work towards as well, which is great.
Same with the women's team. The younger players are saying, if I show here in the under-19s or under-17s, I can get into the first team.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if I can prove myself, I'm in. And the same with the men's. So it's great, both sides.
Yeah.
This week we're doing it a bit different with the podcast. Not one guest, but two guests.
Two guests, yeah. Footballing family associated with the
club.
Have
we a spare seat?
Never mind the seat, we'd find a spare microphone.
That's true, yeah. Forgot about that.
We've only two microphones in here.
But hopefully it just works, no getting an extra microphone, yeah.
Yeah, but
I know, in fairness,
a bit of a goalkeeping flavour.
The Crown Centre here, they're really good to us.
Yeah, the lads at Crown Centre are incredible here. Even just the use of facility is brilliant for us. And as always, we say it all the time, but we're very thankful for it.
Oh, we are. They're brilliant.
And
always a friendly face when we come into reception as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, everyone here is so welcoming. And they're all, like, Porrick here is a Cork City fan, and he's at the Cross, to see him at the Cross every Friday. So it's a brilliant connection. They've got their walk and roll event coming up in June as well, so we'll be doing a bit of publicity with them around that to promote that. Yeah, today's guest, a bit of a goalkeeping flavour to it.
A goalkeeping dynasty in Cork, a family of two goalkeepers, no coaches.
Both involved with the club and have been involved in the club over many years across many different. Trish was a player, Anthony was a coach with now the first team, but the before that the academy, and before that the first team as well. So yeah, Anthony Fennelly and Trish Fennelly are this week's guests. So I'll go look for a chair.
You go look for a chair and we'd better bring in the guests. Welcome to the podcast, guys. It's the first time we've had two people in the room.
That's good. It's nice to get on it. There's been a couple of good characters on it already, so it was good to be asked.
So I suppose we better start with the older person. I suppose we start with you, Anthony.
Oh, I'm not the older person at all.
100%.
Goalkeeping, when did it all kick off, yeah?
I suppose it all kicked off nearly playing GA in school, you know, and with my local club, St. Vincent's. And I started playing in goal as a young boy, and it kind of spiraled on. There was a scenario where I started playing with the school, and then I got selected on the Cork GA schools team. And then my local club, a club called Blarney Street United, Chalky Murphy, John Murphy, and his son Ray knocked on the door and asked me would I be interested in playing soccer. And at the time, I hadn't even given it a thought, to be honest. You know, I think it was only 11 or something like that. And I thought it wasn't in my head at all. But I went up and I said, give it a go. And I actually started enjoying it, to be honest.
And did it put you straight on goal, or were you playing outfield?
Straight on goal. And it's a funny story, actually, because we played outside in, where were we? I think it was Ringmahon. And there was a penalty kick. And I actually stopped the penalty kick, which is... you know, with the GA, once you stop it, everyone runs in and top of you.
Yeah.
You know, so I stopped the penalty kick, jumped up and kicked it as far as I could down the pitch, waiting for someone to come in and hit me, you know, because obviously playing GA, that's what would have happened. And so that was kind of my first experience of starting to play soccer then, you know.
And so then obviously you progressed from there. Did you stay with Blarney United for a few years? Or?
So yeah, so I played with Blarney Street United for kind of under 12s up to about under 15. And then I went to Cove, Rambers then. Liam McMahon signed me, and I went down as number two to Mick Devine. And that same season then, I was just turned 16 and I made my debut against St. Francis.
At 16,
yeah.
What's that like as a 16-year-old, to be honest? Like, big guys in front of you, like...
Yeah, I don't know. I never really gave a thought because once I went to Cove, I trained with the first team all the time. So you kind of get used to that, you know. I was training with some very good players, players like John Murphy and Tony Itzi at the time was a striker there, Packy Kelly and all these guys. Like, so they were proper men. So like I was in that mix all the time, and obviously then I was working with Mick Devine all the time. And
he was a great keeper.
Yes, and I learned an awful lot off Mick. To be honest about it, you know, I followed Mick through my career, like as well. Like when Mick went to Waterford, I then went to Waterford. When Mick left, went to Cork City, I took over from Mick at Waterford. You know what I mean? So like, okay. I kind of followed through that way. But yeah, I learned an awful lot from Mick.
It was very fast progress, though. When you think of it, if you only got introduced to football at 11. You were playing League of Ireland by 16.
Yeah.
Like that must be one of the quickest routes to League of Ireland of all time.
It could have been, yeah, because and how it happened really was Liam McMahon was the manager for my seniors, and he was the Manchester City scout as well. And he came to watch me a few times when I was playing with Blarney Street, and he sent me over to Man City. I think I was only probably 14. I went over to Man City on trial, and so when he got out, he went back to Cove. I think it was about his third spell, actually being Cove manager at the time. And when he went there, then he obviously asked me would I come to Cove. And so he obviously had a bit of faith in me and felt I was, you know, I had some sort of ability anyway to be playing at that level. And come the end of that season, I came on up in St. Francis for Mick Devine.
What's it like as a 14-year-old going off to England for a trial?
Yeah, it's daunting. I felt back then, especially back then, you know, it's different. It might be a little bit different now with social media and all that kind of stuff.
Connected, like, but probably a bit easier.
Yes,
now.
Yeah, but it's quite daunting, you know. It was a random one. Actually, my first time going to Man City, it was actually in school, and my mother got a phone call, and they had to come down to school, take me out of school, and basically I was flying to go to school that day. I was flying out that night to go and play in the Manchester Cup. Like, so, like, it was kind of. You know, it was a rushed one, and I went over there then for a couple of days, like, which was, it was a great experience, like.
Did someone go with you?
No, that was the thing. I went on my own. So I flew on my own, and Colin Bell, actually, Manchester legend, yeah. He picked me up at the airport. and I stayed with him when I was out there. Oh. So, you know, it probably wouldn't happen now, like. No. You know?
They'd have to have some sort of guardian with you. I'd imagine, you see nowadays, the families nearly all move with them when they're younger now.
Yeah, so no, I was over in trial, over and back at a few clubs, and I always went on my own. The club would arrange that you're picked up at the airport and you're looked after over there. And any time I went to Man City, it was that kind of, Colin Bell would pick me up, and I'd either stay in digs with a family and a couple of players. Like I became very close with a lad called Joe Harkin, a Derry lad. He played with Derry City afterwards as well. Yeah. And he played with Cove Ramblers. But I met him when I was over there. And it's mad because how football spins around. He came to Cove a couple of seasons later then. You know, after I was after Man City, staying with him a few times, he ended up signing with Cove Ramblers. And then we ended up playing together, you know. So it's mad how football spins around.
And like destiny in many ways.
Yeah.
Around this time, so Trish, did you start taking up the game then? You saw your older brother starting to play? Like, or how did that work?
Obviously we used to kind of travel the country, like, basically going to all Anthony's games and stuff like that. And how I came around to play actually is, I think you were playing with Limerick at the time.
No, playing for Waterford, that's it.
Waterford with David Moore.
Yeah, David Moore and his mother.
His mum, Una, she was at the game and she was involved with Douglas Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And she just said to me, she said, look, would you be interested in coming up and, you know, seeing how you get on? So literally had never played football before, went up, trained at Douglas Hall, put me straight in goal, and it just, again, progressed from there. Like,
so the two of you were just thrown straight in as goalkeeper.
Straight in at the deep end, yeah.
Straight in, off you go.
Do you know what? I suppose, in a way, it's not a bad way to do it either, you know, because, you know, you don't think about it a whole lot either.
Yeah, because sometimes a lot of goalkeepers start outfield. I know a lot of goalkeepers start up front or, you know, and then all of a sudden somebody says one day, you throw on the keeper jersey there and...
Do you know what? Maybe that's not a bad thing either, because you end up with better feet.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like better on the ball. Like I suppose I worked a lot with Mark McNulty as goalkeeper coach at Cork with Tommy Dunn. And I found Mark was very good with his feet, and that's because Mark played outfield till he was 16.
Was he 16?
Yes, he was 16 before he made the transition to goalkeeping. You know, so you could see that too when he plays, like.
Yeah, so there's a bit of difference. And they say the same when the lads in Ringmahon will tell you that Cuivín played up front or something first and then they threw him on goal or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose there's different ways to look at it. So you were thrown in as a goalkeeper and you stuck with it?
Yeah, stuck with it. I suppose that was my first year playing football, playing soccer, like playing a goal. And my first year I was put onto the Gaelic Cup team.
In the first year, yeah.
I went into the under-18 Gaelic Cup team. Actually, Colin O'Brien, that played for Cork City, was manager. So, I played 2 Gaelic Cups with him, again, as manager, and got called up into the Irish under-19s team. Again, just happened very quick, like. Yeah, so it was just, you know, from basically travelling the country, watching his games, and when he just said to me, would you be interested? And I just fell in love with it, like, and... progressed again from there, like.
But at that stage then, we bought a home, but like, would you be practicing out the backyard and throwing balls at each other or anything like that, or was there anything like that happening?
No, but like, when she started playing, I would have obviously looked to kind of educate her on certain things that she would have done right and done wrong in games, you know. And to be fair, we would even have very supportive family that way, where we would go to each other's games. Like, I would have gone to some of her games in Douglas Hall, and sometimes I might have been too critical of what she was doing. You know what I mean? Like,
I used to hate when he was coming to the games. He would just be looking, and if you'd done something wrong, you were like, oh my God.
You're getting a full debrief
after
the match.
Literally, you're not even out of the dressing room when he's in your ear.
Yeah.
I suppose it toughened you up probably as well in many ways, did it?
100%. Like, no, I suppose like it's good to have somebody that can educate you and kind of give you that little bit of help. Like, but it was always a little bit of pressure too if he was at the game, because you kind of knew he knew what he was talking about.
We hoped
anyway, yeah. But no, it was good. It was good to have somebody there that you could ask for advice and who could give you the little tips and so forth, you know.
And Anthony, you said then you started kind of moving around clubs then. You went to a good few different League of Ireland clubs, did you, over the years?
Yeah, I played a good few clubs. So I obviously broke my leg in England, really bad. I smashed my fib and tib in England, in Exeter, and then I came back. And when I came back, I was very lucky because Phil Harrington took me under his wing, and I was really struggling to get back playing, and it was a bad injury, you know. And
How long were you out?
I was out for nearly a year and a half. Because obviously back then, like, an injury like that to come back to from is nearly impossible, you know.
Challenging a match.
Yeah, so it was over in Exeter. I just came out for a ball. Ball was played through and I slid out for it and he slid in. and it was just basically a two footer, and smashed my fib and tib. So straight in for, got the operation done. They put a pin from my knee to my ankle, and then two screws in the ankle and a screw across the knee. But so coming back from that, I found it really tough.
Mentally as well, I'd say.
Would you
be afraid kind of going back in for challenges?
No, something like that would never, it never faze me. But what I did find was the just keeping the head in the right place in the off period, you know what I mean? Like, because I suppose strength and conditioning and all that kind of stuff wouldn't have been as high on the agenda back then as what it is now, you know. And so I was just trying to keep myself fit and get back in some kind of shape to start training again. But I was lucky, Phil brought me out training with Cork City. Noel Mooney was a keeper at the time, and Phil, I'd say for about 3 months, put me through absolute hell. But it was the hell that I needed, you know. He worked us really hard, and I was lucky. Pat Dolan then signed me at St. Pat's, so I got the opportunity to go full time then, and it was like, that's what I needed. Like, I was in every day, building myself back up, you know. And that was the year Pat's actually pipped Cork to the title in 99. Liam Buckley was the manager.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you were full time then. Were you playing or were you on the bench?
I was on the bench. So a lad called Trevor Wood was the goalkeeper. He was probably the best keeper in the league at the time, you know. But it was fantastic to be in and around the squad. Like, I would have known the likes of Colin Hawkins and Trevor Malloy, yeah, Paul O'Zam was there now, and Thomas Morgan and stuff like that. So I would have known the three of them from playing with the Irish team. So it was good kind of to be able to go into a squad where you knew a few people as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good to get back full-time football, and that really kind of brought me on again and kind of kick-started my career, even though I didn't play many games up there. But it was just being involved in that full-time environment to get fit properly. That's what kind of got me back on track.
And so how long were you over in Exeter for?
So I was over and back kind of on trial, and I was over and back to Wimbledon as well. And it was over in Exeter that I'd done the leg.
So it was only a trial, but that must be kind of heartbreaking in many ways. You think, this is my chance, you know, to make it across the water. Next thing you get a bad injury.
Oh, that's football though, isn't it? You know what I mean? And I've always looked at it that way, like, you know, one door opens, and one door closes, another one opens. So you have to kind of take the good with the bad with football, because you can get the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows very fast.
And at that point then, when you're injured for a year and a half, are you starting to think, okay, what else should I be doing with my life? Like, is it a case of, what happens if I don't get back in?
No, in my head, I always wanted to be a professional footballer, you know. That was my goal. And to be honest about it, like, schooling and all that kind of stuff always kind of went on the back burner, you know. But yeah, it was like, I was fully focused to get back and get right. And as I said, the opportunity to just go back in full-time at St. Pat's, that saved it really, you know.
So you jumped at that then, at that stage. Where'd you go after Pat's then?
So when I was at Pat's then, I went on loan to Limerick for a season. And to be honest about it, it went okay. I had good games, I had bad games. You know, when you're trying to get back playing again after such a bad injury, like, you know, I had good games and bad games. And I was lucky then because Mick was at Waterford, and Waterford had got relegated to the first division. So they knew Mick wanted to get out at the time, I would presume. So they came and they asked me what I signed. So I signed for Waterford as number 2 to Mick. And then I think we were only, I'd say, a couple of games in the season, and Mick went to Waterford. Lee Murphy signed Mick for Waterford, and that's when I got my proper chance then, like.
And were you full time with them as well?
I was full time at Waterford, yeah.
Yeah, because you think with first division that they wouldn't be able to.
Do you know what? They worked very well actually at the time, because they tied in with Foss.
Okay.
And they had maybe 7 or 8 of us full time, so we were all training in the morning, and then we trained in the evening, then some nights as well, where the other boys would come in. You know, so they kind of worked it really well.
Kind of
that
like
way.
A half and half type of scenario. Half
yes,
the team,
but I think the way they worked it was, I think Foss paid some of the wages as well. Mm. You know, so like, it saved the club as well, having to pay out, we say, big money, like.
And at the same time, interest. Did you stay with Douglas Hall or did you move on?
I played with Douglas Hall for like a good few seasons, about 4 or 5 seasons. And I actually went and signed for Benfica and Waterford, who would have been playing in the Dublin's Women's League at the time.
Even though they were in Waterford.
Yeah. So that would have been technically like the League of Ireland back then, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it would have been all the top players in it. But when I was up with the Irish under-19s, they were saying that like they wanted us playing at kind of the highest level we could. So I actually met Freddie through Waterford, where Anthony was, like, and he was managing Benfica, who had been playing in that league. So he asked me, would I be interested in coming down there? So I did. I signed down there for a year and literally was travelling up and down to train. And then
from Cork?
From Cork, yeah. And bus to Dublin, like literally getting on the bus in town, getting the bus to Dublin, meeting them.
Would they cover your expenses then to go up and down? Like, or
No.
To cover yourself?
Covered ourselves, yeah. Covered myself, yeah.
Yeah, like that's, it's mad. Like, it's a huge commitment.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. I suppose back then, like Anthony, I wanted to play football. Mm. And like obviously being in training around the Irish team environment, and I wanted to get in there and play. So when it was said to me, just, you know, about trying to play at the highest level I could, I just kind of took the opportunity.
And it's easy for people to forget that the women's game in Ireland, didn't, especially in Cork, I think, it was a late developer, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it was, yeah.
Dublin was a good bit ahead. I think I spoke to Ciara about that a few weeks ago, like, you know.
It was, like, even, like, when I went playing up there now, like, you're playing against teams and all the top players back then would have been playing with the Dublin sides, like, so, like, even the difference, like, was huge, like, you know what I mean? So, like, it was good experience, and, you know, I suppose it set me on the path then to actually playing in the Women's National League when it actually
was founded.
Yeah.
And who did you play for first in the Women's League? Did you play for the Cork team?
Yeah. So I was
before it became Cork City.
Yeah. So I would have been, like, so we were Cork Women's FC back then. So I would have been, like, I was 6 years there. I played 6 years with the Cork Women's FC, and then I think it was 2 years before I left Cork where they would have actually joined together with Cork City. Mm. So yeah, but 6 years I spent at Cork, yeah.
And like those early days of the league and stuff, like what was that like, you know, after, you know, playing in Waterford and stuff like that, to play for your home club, you know, it must have been great. Like,
well, look, I suppose I always say, like, I played, as I say, 6 years at Cork, and they were my best years in football. Like, I loved it, loved every minute of it. And like the way the league has progressed from when I started to where it is now, like, there's massive difference, like, huge. But like, always, like, pro Cork person and delighted to have played for Cork.
And when did you come into the city fold then, Anthony?
I would have known Tommy Dunn, and from playing against him, obviously, and Greg O'Halloran. And I had just finished up playing with Longford, and they needed a goalkeeping coach. So Tommy rang me and asked me would I come in. And
so your career was finished at this point?
My career was finished, yeah. Yeah, just finished up. And Tommy asked me would I come in. They wanted someone to work with Mark, you know, and I would have known Mark quite well. And I think at the time there was obviously no goalkeeping coach at the club, and, you know, the club was only after just getting reformed again by the supporters.
So 2009, 2010, yes, kind of around that. Yeah.
So it was the first season back. And I think it was a scenario where, like, Mark wasn't getting the work he needed, you know. So they needed someone to come in and just, you know, just pick up bits and pieces where what he was doing right and what he was doing wrong, and help him and just shift him in the right direction again, you know. And and I came in and it went really well. Mark's level of performance started really jumping up, and we took it from there. Then obviously I was working with Tommy and Billy Woods and Greg O'Halloran, and it was, do you know what, now I started really enjoying it again. So that's kind of where we said the goalkeeping coaching side of it started happening for me then, you know. But yeah, we just kind of spiraled it on, and we started building a squad then where, you know, we were starting to get competitive again, at least in the league after the club folding.
Yeah.
And then the following season we really kicked on, you know.
And be outside of the footballing, because that wasn't a full time role, was it?
No, it wasn't a full time role. No.
You were building kind of personal training business outside of that, were you?
Yeah, so I own a gym called Urban Fitness, and when I kind of finished, I started getting involved in that, you know. And it was grand, and, like, don't get me wrong, we still have it, it's still going to this day, which is nearly 20 years later. But I enjoy it, but my passion is football.
Football.
Yeah.
So that kind of supplements the football. It's kind of like, exactly, the cash cow, as they'd say. That's in the background.
That's in the background.
It's tipping away.
Exactly, yeah. But like my life is football, like, you know.
But there's elements, obviously, of that for strength and conditioning and stuff that comes into the game. for or does it? Or oh, do you yeah. need that to the oh,
no. no, 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 massively. Yeah, it's great to have that knowledge and to even to be able to relate that to the goalkeepers and bring some of that kind of training into their work as well, you know. Like when I do pre-season, like pre-season is tough. You know, pre-season, the goalkeepers really work. And we make sure that, like, for me, the goalkeepers have to be fitter, if not fitter, than what the lads in on the pitch are, because of concentration levels and stuff like that. So for me, the concentration levels have to be really important. And if you look at Brad Wade this year, some of the saves he's made late on in games, when he's had nothing to do,
unbelievable.
That all comes down to concentration, you know. And we've worked. There are things we've worked on and spoke about is getting his fitness levels as high as we possibly can, so that when he has to do something, and especially in the first season this year where we are going to control games and we are going to dominate games a lot, he's got to have his concentration levels really high, so that when he is called upon, well, then he can do his work.
And Trish, did you work in Urban Fitness as well then at the same time?
Yeah.
Did you get into it at a younger age or how did that work?
When I finished school, like obviously for me, again, sport like was everything. So I went and done a course and stuff on AFA. So I went and done sports studies and stuff on AFA for 3 years, where basically you get your personal training qualification and you do massage and so forth. So I done that. And then obviously when Anthony opened up Urban Fitness, then it was just the natural progression then.
Straight into the family business.
Slaving, yeah.
No pay.
Yeah.
You have to build somehow. Yeah.
So just went working there and like still now, like I still do work there as well. Like.
And like, so you were doing that because obviously you weren't being paid playing for the Cork team at the time. So like, I suppose you kind of had to balance life probably even more so. In many ways, did you?
Yeah, well, it wasn't too bad. Like, obviously, it was grand, the fact that, like, obviously, Anthony understood football and knew, like, that we were training 3 nights a week and then travelling for a game. So it worked grand as well to be able to do, like, little bits in the gym during the day, keep the fitness levels up. And it all worked out perfectly with regards, like, some jobs, they don't want to be giving you time off for training and they don't want to be leaving you travelling for matches, like, whereas... Like I was able to do all that.
So she had a good boss is what she's saying.
No. Definitely not saying that anyway.
And like, would you find then that you get a lot of kind of aspiring footballers, but you know, young boys, young girls starting to come to the gym to try and get training and stuff like in their teens, like, or?
Yeah, but you get, to be honest with you, I get a mix. You get a mix because of other sports that I'm involved in as well. So you'd get a mix of different type of athletes and stuff like that coming in, you know.
Mm. And did I see, Trish, then, that you met another goalkeeper as well? Lifetime partner.
Lifetime partner, yeah.
What
yeah.
did that happen?
through Twitter.
Through Twitter?
Yeah, through Twitter. So we just started chatting through Twitter. Well, apparently he said Extra Time retweeted something about me. So he saw it and he followed me and we just kind of started getting chatting about football.
They claim it's Twitter. I reckon it's Tinder though. to be honest.
No, do you know why though? Because I don't think Tinder was even around back then.
It was a good while back, was it?
So we just got kind of chatting like and just hit it off from there. And
like, so the whole lot of you are all goalkeepers. So,
all
like,
goalkeepers, yeah.
And a random one, my brother is a goalkeeper as well. He was Cork under 21 hurling goalkeeper with Donald Cusack in the same panel as that, you know. So he's been a goalkeeper as well.
But that kind of, doesn't that happen in families? Because if you look at the Hendersons, but you look at the likes of the Kellys as well, Alan Kelly and all that, the same thing kind of.
Yeah.
There's a couple of families with goalkeepers in the house.
Yeah, so sometimes I think it's just, you know, it follows suit, doesn't it? Because obviously, like, if the younger generation pick up on things, you know, and then they just kind of follow suit then and they might... You know, see you're doing well at something and then just kind of follow in on that.
I like how you said younger generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes a certain...
That's what about you and me.
It takes a certain character, I'd imagine, as well, though, to be a goalkeeper. They often say they're kind of slightly crazy. Am I right in saying that? Like, because you have to be kind of...
You need a tough skin. You need a tough skin. Like, it's the most rewarding position on the pitch when things are going right.
Mm.
But like when you make a mistake, it's tough going. Like
there's not as much forgiveness in many ways, is there?
No.
It just depends as well on what level you're playing at. I think the higher level you go up, you know, and the mistakes become more relevant, and you know there's more pressure on you as well. I would say that the higher level you go up, and the more you get exposed as well. If you're you know, if you're not ready for that level, then it can become really tough.
Yeah, whereas I suppose the outfield players, they kind of share responsibility in many ways. I know the forwards are expected to score goals, and, you know, but...
Yeah, but I always say the outfield players can make 2 and 3 mistakes in a game, and it's just sugarcoated over. Like, they can give the ball away 2 or 3 or 4 times in a game, and someone else is going to be there to cover what they do, you know. Whereas as a goalkeeper, like, it's what did I read? I read a little thing there recently. It was the former Celtic goalkeeper, the Polish lad. What's his name?
Can't think of the name either, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and he said being a goalkeeper is like being a bomb maker. He said if you get it wrong, everyone goes kaboom.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. And it is that, I suppose. Yeah. And then, of course, it's replayed forever, especially if you're at the highest level. Cameras are on you. Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, over the years, have you ever experienced any abuse then because of mistakes that you've made?
Oh, I have, yeah. 100%, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt, yeah. Like, obviously playing League of Ireland and stuff like that, like, you're playing in front of, you know, bigger crowds and, you know, bigger pressure games, you know. So I've made a couple of big mistakes in games where you're like, you know, the fans are on your case, you know.
It's
mainly your own fans, you know. Yeah.
Slagging from the opposition fans most of the time.
Yeah, but you know what though, you just have to have a thick skin, and it's all part of the game, you know. Like, as goalkeepers, you are going to make mistakes. I don't care who you are or what level you're playing at, you know, every goalkeeper's prone to a mistake here and there, you know. So it's just how you react to that then. And I always say, once you make a mistake, the game starts again. You forget about it. Because if you start dwelling on it, well, then you have a problem, like, you know, because you will make another one and another one. So once you make a mistake as a goalkeeper, put it to bed and the game starts again.
Do you see that now with the younger goalkeepers coming through, like, that you have to watch them, especially with social media and stuff like that, whereby criticism kind of comes with you after the game as well? You know, long ago, maybe went away, it could have been in the papers or whatever, but...
Yes. Listen, we always work with the goalkeepers, and, like, My thing with them always is, like, you know, you make a mistake, you put it to bed, you do not linger on it, you do not think about it during the game. The game has to restart and you have to forget about it, and just, it's a new game again, you know. Because if you linger on things like that at the higher level, well, then you get exposed very, very fast, you know. But, like, again, and that's a big one with social media, with the younger keepers, just try to tell them, ignore it, you know, blank it out, you know.
Yeah, people have clips or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you had 6 years with Cork women's team, Trish. What happened after that then?
I actually signed for Piemont. So I went and played for 2 seasons up at Piemont.
Strong side, like.
Yeah, strong
playing
side.
With brilliant players, I'd
imagine.
Yeah,
they were very good.
A lot, like, of Irish internationals.
Yeah, a lot of the girls now, like Amber Barrett, Niamh Reid-Burke, like, they were very good, very strong side. So I obviously, just the opportunity arose, and it was something, like, I felt I couldn't turn down. So I went up there, played 2 years, again, travelling up and down, 2 nights a week for training, game at the weekend.
What did you drive up then, or, like?
Drive up and down, yeah.
Yeah, but you must be exhausted after that, though. Like,
it was tough going, it was. Like, you were talking, like, training there at 8 o'clock in the evening, like, so by the time you're getting home, you know, it was tough going, but again, it was what I wanted, and I wanted to play at the highest level I could. So I just, like I say, I just did it. Like,
and you obviously want to test yourself with the best players and say, you know, do I belong here, kind of a thing.
100%, you know, and, like, I mean, it was, like, huge experience to get to play with these players, and like, to see where some of them are now as well. Like, I suppose I would have played against the likes of Katie McCabe and stuff like that, and, like, just to see how their careers have progressed now is, you know, it's a testament to the way football in Ireland is going.
Do you ever look on then and kind of feel a small bit jealous that you kind of, your career kind of started maybe a bit too early compared to, like, if it was in the present day, there'd be much more opportunities?
100%. And I say that to the girls in the 19s now. I'm like, if I would love to have my time over again and have what you have, like, proper strength and conditioning, proper pitches, you know, it's all done properly, like, proper coach and staff. You know, like, everything is set out for them now. Like, they've, as they say, strength and conditioning, nutrition, the whole lot. Like, I would give anything to have my time over and do it all again.
And is that one of the main reasons you got into coaching?
Well, I suppose...
Nurture the next generation?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I played up until two seasons ago. Like I went with the under-17s last year, but before that I had played two seasons at Treaty. And just Danny obviously came into the women's side and he was looking for coaches and he just said to me, would I be interested? So obviously, like, playing the 2 years of Treaty, and I just kind of felt, you know.
And did you come back to Treaty after having a child as well?
I did, yeah.
Like, that's something not, like...
Yeah, well, I had, obviously, when I got pregnant, I had thought, right, that's it. I won't play again.
My career's over.
Yeah, just because, obviously, you know, it's a lot of commitment and having a little child and whatever. But, like, I think I was, like, 6 months after having Annabelle when it was actually Galway. I got a phone call off Galway asking me to sign up there. So I did. I went up and signed for Galway and I stayed up there for a season. But again, like, the travelling with the small one and everything was,
tough going.
And then obviously Treaty then. Dave Rooney asked me to sign down there, which was a lot closer to home. And yeah, I had two seasons down there then. And
then into the coaching world with Danny.
Into the coaching world with Danny then. I just had decided to just call it a day. The travelling and everything was too much, and he just asked me would I be interested in the coaching side. So Craig Robinson was manager and I went in as goalkeeping coach with the under-17s last year, yeah.
So then the two of you are in the club at the same time, both goalkeeping coaches. Are you kind of then sharing notes or what way does that happen?
Well, obviously, you know, if Trish would come to me and say, look, you know, of any sessions that I can do and work on and different things, you'd obviously help her out, like, you know what I mean, and give her whatever information she needs, you know. But again, it's just all about developing all the goalkeepers in the club, like, isn't it? You know, push everyone in the same direction.
And that must be a big part of the club now. Like, the academy is so big in compared to, like, obviously there wasn't a women's academy for years. No. The men's academy is a fairly new thing as well in comparison to maybe in your day. I wasn't there. It was, you know, you didn't join until you were kind of under 17 as such, like,
yeah,
mainly.
Yeah.
So it's huge. So do you kind of keep an eye on the really younger ones that are coming in as well?
Well, I would have already brought in now the likes of Rory Maloney. Dan has been in with the first team. AJ has been in with the first team, so they're all with the 17s and the 20s now, as it is, you know. And we try to bring them in with us with the first team as much as we can. So some mornings there I might have five keepers in with me.
To give
them a taste with it, let them get a feel of how it is working with at a higher level, how the game is a lot quicker, you know, working with experienced players that, like, will demand things from them as well. Even in the sessions, like, you're working with the likes of Keane Coleman, Greg Bolger, and to be working with these lads for these young goalkeepers is fantastic. You know, they'll pick up so much from that.
They learn all the way.
Yeah.
But sure, your challenge, I'd imagine, Trish is holding on to him, because Danny's probably taking on them and they're good, because I know there's a lot of young girls in the first team already.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. Like I suppose the majority of the 19 squad now will have 3 years at under 19s. You know, so they're technically still eligible to play under 17s.
And are they allowed to play both?
They can play both. Yeah, they can play both. Sure, the rule is now that I think is it under 17s girls can play under 15s boys.
Oh, can they?
Yeah, that's the new ruling now. They can actually go in and play in the boys' league, yeah. But, like, for us, like, there's still girls with the senior squad who are eligible to play under 19s.
Yeah.
So,
including Claude on goal.
Including Claude,
so
yeah.
So you'd be probably keeping an eye on her.
You would do,
and watching,
like,
her progress as well.
Like, I had worked with Claude last year, like, with the 17s, and, like, you know, you could tell, like, her feet, like, again, we're talking about feet for goalkeepers, her feet are exceptional. Like, so, like, she had, like, again, at 16, 17, like, up playing senior, is just, it's massive. Like, but yeah, I'm trying to hold on to my players, all right. So,
what age are the youngest players on your team then?
They'd be 16.
Okay.
So, we'd have them from 16, like, as I said, they'd still be eligible to play under 17. And then they'd range up to kind of 18. The majority of the girls have this season and next season at 19s. And then obviously they'll be hoping to progress into the senior squad from there.
And what was it like taking over as the manager rather than just being the goalkeeping coach then?
It's a big step. Like, it's a lot of responsibility, you know. Like, you're dealing with a lot more than what you would as a goalkeeping coach. Like, obviously, like, you know, like, picking the team is probably the hardest part, because like you obviously want to play everybody and you want to be as fair as you can to everybody and give everybody as much game time as you can. Like it's a big step up, but like if you're organised and you have good coaching staff around you.
You have a couple on your team, have you?
Yeah, it makes it that little bit easier, like, you know.
And I'd imagine it's the same with the senior setup. There's so many of you. Have you an assistant, Anthony, in goalkeeping, or is it just yourself?
No, I wish I had. No,
not that big.
No, it's just myself. So, like, obviously, with the first team, we have obviously the gaffer, Tim. We have Richie, Hamo, and myself. So that would be the first team staff that's there, you know. But we'd all give a dig out to each other, you know what I mean? So, like, obviously, if I'm in a goalkeeping session, once I'm finished my stuff, I still help the lads with the outfield stuff as well, you know what I mean, and whatever they need.
But you're the longest man there now at this point in terms of... You're about 13, 14 years?
Yeah. Probably, yeah, at the club, yeah, I'd say all in all. I had a break in between where I went down to Limerick as assistant manager with Stuart Taylor.
What was that like?
Very good, actually. I really enjoyed it. Different to, obviously, coaching the goalkeepers, you know, but it was nice.
And did you have a separate goalkeeping coach?
Yeah, we did, yeah. He actually ended up being here for a spell, actually, as well. Stuart just rang me and asked me to come in. But I know Stuart from playing against him when he was here in the League of Ireland. And he asked me to come in and take over as assistant manager. And they were in Premier Division at the time as well. So we were playing in Toma Park. It was a good experience.
That's good, yeah.
You know.
But you must have had a fierce connection then with Mark, because if like with Noel's, like how many years were you coaching him? Like it must have been 10 years.
Yeah, on off I've worked with Mark for a good spell. I'd say a good 7, 8, 9 years. It could be, yeah. But me and Mark have a great relationship. Always had. And I would have been very honest with him when he was doing things wrong, and very honest when he was doing things right. You know, wouldn't pull any punches. And to be honest, he was fantastic to work with.
And like, what were the highlights over the years? Obviously, I'd imagine the double eyes was it?
I wasn't there then. I was gone then. I was at Limerick that season.
You missed out the one time that you actually...
Yeah, I missed out that season. But I think beating Shells up in Talca Park, last kick of the game when we won the first division.
Comments, yeah.
That was an amazing night, you know. We had a great group.
Especially coming kind of from the adversity of the club near... Folding, we spoke about it there recently on the podcast, but
yeah,
to kind of emerging again,
yeah, and even
with a lot of younger players as well, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, the likes of Gerald Morrissey were only coming through then, and actually Alan Brown was in and around the squad before he went off to Preston. But we had a very good squad. Greg O'Halloran was captain at the time. We had Mark and goal, you know. You had Danny Murphy playing. Still, we'd have to come back to the club as well from Rovers. You had Graham Cummins up top. Some good players there, you know. There was a good core there, you know.
So that was the highlight.
That was definitely the highlight, and even the way we won it that night.
So you obviously had a good relationship with Tommy. So at the time as well, did you?
I still have a good relationship with Tommy, actually.
Yeah.
Tommy was fantastic. Tommy and Billy. I had a very good relationship with the two of them. I'd still be in contact with both of them, you know. Regularly enough, they were great to work with. Tommy was fiery, very fiery in the dressing room, you know. But they worked well together, you know what I mean? So, like, if one kicked off, the other will calm down. Then you're trying to calm... Billy would be calming him down. That's when Billy would kick off, you know? Billy was very fiery altogether, you know? But what a character Billy Woods is.
Yeah, but a club legend as well in many ways, like, yeah. You know, so...
But you'd learn so much off the likes of them as well, even just being around them, you know? You know, because, like, Billy's idolised at the club here, you know, by the fans, and... I mean, he's done everything here. So to work with him for so long was fantastic.
So did you go when John came in?
I went when John came in, yeah.
And when did you come back?
And Billy actually brought me back. Billy took over the under 15s at the time, and I was actually in the Middle East. I went out there PTing and doing a bit of coaching in the Middle East. And Billy rang me and said, would you be interested? And I was actually away when he rang me. And I said, look, I'll be away for another couple of months, but I said when I come back I'll get involved. So I actually came back and got involved with the 15s.
Walk your way back
and,
up.
So it was myself, Billy and Dan Murray.
Oh yeah.
You know, so to be honest with it, and that's the reason I kind of got back involved, because I enjoyed lads and working with the lads are very good. Mm-hmm. And then we took the 17s the following year, you know, and that it was kind of, you know, we stayed in and around them for about 4 or 5 years with the academy, which is great to work with the kids.
I'd say so. And any of them players gone on to better things that you worked with over the years?
Yeah, well, like Scottle Heffernan now, and he's at Newcastle at the moment, you know. He's done quite well. But like, you know, it's great to see where it's gone with the academy. From when we came in at the start of the academy, the League of Ireland kind of at that level was only starting, and it's gone from strength to strength. And you know, you see what Liam Kearney's doing with it now at the moment. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and even all the trips abroad and stuff like that, playing different teams, and you know, going to Portugal and the UK, playing sports and stuff like that. And you know, it's great to see.
Oh, it's great education for the kids to be able to go over there and play against teams like that and play at that level. You know what I mean?
And you be competitive against.
Yeah,
teams.
And you see the like Jaden and Kyle O'Sullivan coming through there. Like, I mean, the work that's been done in the academy is fantastic.
Are you hoping the same thing happens on the women's side of it? The underage.
Yeah, well, to be fair now, like, since Danny's come in, like, there's been huge kind of like progress in not only the senior side, like, but all the way through the academy. Like, you know, it's about having somebody in there that's looking to do the right things, you know, like, and to be fair to Danny, like, that's what he's looking to do. So like, there's talks now, we are looking at maybe a trip away.
Brilliant.
And again, like, you know, the girls are being well looked after, like, with everything, again, like, as I say, true strength and conditioning and like all their gear and so forth. Like, so it's all been done right. Proper coach and staff being put in place, and Danny's kind of making sure that that's all been there for the girls. Like, obviously the academy doing well is going to progress into the seniors doing well, and that's what he's looking to do.
Make a strong Cork prom.
Yeah.
Cork, I suppose, reared squad in many ways.
Yeah, so just basically have like a strong squad from the 17s through to the 19s and the seniors, and just have it all working in unison. Like,
do you see now with the younger girls that are playing for you, is there a different mindset in that they're kind of thinking, I could get a move across the water? Like, are you seeing that happen now?
You would see it. Like, I mean, I suppose they're looking at the girls now who have actually made careers out of it. Like, whereas when I was growing up, like, you know, obviously I wanted to play football, but in your head you're like, where am I going to go to make a career out of it? You know, at the time you were talking America, and to go there was very, very rare. Whereas now the girls have so many opportunities because, like, women's football is so big now.
It's a big industry in the UK, not just the UK, obviously in France. And
yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, there's options there now that probably weren't there before. And now, like, there's more, even with the league, like, even take the senior league, like, there's more advertisement of it, like, so players are getting exposed more.
And you're probably seeing a lot more players emerge from other clubs that you maybe keep an eye on as well, like, from junior clubs, like, the likes of your Douglas Halls, the likes of your Wiltons and stuff like that, and other clubs. No, because I know when Ciara was in a few weeks ago, she said there wasn't a club on the north side that had a girls team. Oh, that is changing, I'd imagine, is it?
Yeah, it's like, that's what I'm saying. Like even from, like, when I had to play, like, local football, I ended up in Douglas Hall because, like, obviously we're from the north side, and there just wasn't, like, you're talking, there was Douglas Hall, there was Wilton, but there was no teams in the north side. Now, I know Ciara's dad has Holly Hill going up there now, and like, he's putting a lot of effort into that. So it's good to see that, like, not just, we'd say, the academy structure, but, like, local clubs are starting to put more female teams in. There's more emphasis being put on the women's game.
And the FAI are doing a lot around it.
Yeah, they are. Like, the FAI have, like, they do all this. I don't think it's Soccer Sisters anymore now, but that's what they had, like, you know, and there's more money being put into the women's game as well from grassroots level up. Even there with the coaching badges, like, they're offering, like, C licenses to clubs and stuff like that to try and get coaches involved in the women's side of the game, you know.
And you have UEFA coaching license, have you?
Yeah.
So what's the process involved in that?
So basically, like, I have my B outfield and I have my B goalkeeping as well. You literally, like, your their courses that the FAI put on, like, you have to have a certain qualification now to coach in the academy structure, like, so
you can't just come in off the street, like, and no, somebody's parents or whatever, just
you have to have a minimum of a C license to actually sit on the bench now. And then obviously to manage, you need a B or an A. So it's a B for the 17s and an A for, you have to be on your A license for the 19s.
The National League.
Yeah. So, like, you literally are, could take a year. The process could be a year where you literally have to, you have assignments that you need to set up, and like assessors come down from the FEA and assess you, and you have to do blocks. So you'd have two or three blocks in the year where you go up to Dublin and you basically have to get on the pitch and show them your coaching plans and stuff like that.
And you've been through all this, Anthony. You have your AIR licence, have you?
I have the outfield AIR goalkeeping. It's a tough process, like, you know. It can be tedious enough. And I think as the years have gone on, it's probably got a little bit harder as well, you know.
But it's probably good that it's in place in terms of, does it keep a structure in terms of everyone is kind of singing off the same hymn sheet in terms of coaching? Levels?
Yeah, but I still think you'll go under your coaching badges. That's all well and good, you know. But then you have to bring your own spin and your own personality to the pitch, you know. You're going up there and the FA obviously want it done a certain way, which is fine, you know. But then when you're in with your group and in your environment, well, then your personality has to come out, how you work with the players, what you demand from players, you know. And everybody will have their own way and their own stamp and their own kind of style that they want your team to play, you know. So, like, that's a big thing. Like, when you're a coach, you have to bring your own style and you have to come with a plan and a system and a way you want your team to play. Because if you don't have a structure of how you want to play, well, then it's never going to work, really, you know.
And who, like, do you get inspiration in from overseas? Like, are you watching what, you know, the top goalkeeping coaches in Europe and stuff? Are you looking at anything like that?
I would watch a lot of what the England setup are doing at the moment. You know, they're really good. They would put a lot of stuff online. So you can take a lot off social media and off YouTube and stuff. But still, for me, for goalkeeping, it goes back to experience, you know. I think if you've played at the higher level and then if you're working in the higher level, I think it's a huge advantage because you can put yourself in the shoes of, we say, how a goalkeeper is feeling at certain points in the season, what he's gone through, you know. You can talk to him. And I go back to a big one with Mark McNulty, actually, was when I came in first at the time, you know, his form was up and down, you know. And I just told him, I said, take every game as if it's your last game, you know. Enjoy the process. Enjoy what you're doing, you know. And I said, when you start enjoying your football, you'll play your best football. Because I would always felt that myself. When I was enjoying it, I would always play well. If I wasn't enjoying it, my form could be fairly rapid up and down, you know. So it's a big thing to have the experience of, you know, when the goalkeeper's playing well and when he's not playing well, because you've been in that situation yourself. So it's a good way, one, you can talk to him and you can kind of let him know how to improve it and what you've done and how your experiences were, you know. So I think that's a huge advantage.
More so than actually just watching videos all the time. It's probably the best thing lived experience.
Yes, like watching videos is grand to get drills and all that kind of stuff. But I think when you've lived it and you've been there and you have that experience to be able to sit down and talk to him and help him through tough situations and even when they're doing well, help them to improve again and carry on what they're doing, you know. I think that's invaluable.
So how do you think the team are doing at the moment? There's only two goals conceded so far.
Yeah, it's been like from a goalkeeping perspective, we've done really well, you know. Defensively, we're doing really well. And I think over the last couple, especially the Cove game, we played really well. I think in patches up UCD the other night, we played really well. I think we dominated the ball for most of the game. I think we were like 60-61% possession of that game, you know. Just at times, and maybe at the top of the pitch, we just have to be a little bit more ruthless, because defensively we're very, very strong and we're not going to concede many goals. We've got two very good solid centre halves, and like we're dominating teams with the ball. I mean, Greg sitting in front of the back four there, is his wealth of experience is unbelievable, you know.
That's helping some of the younger lads.
Oh, massively, yeah, massively. Like, and even the way he talks on the pitch. I mean, he's your manager on the pitch, if you get me. Like, he leads, and then you've like Sean Murray as well, who's got a wealth of experience, you know, and Jack Doherty. So like with having these type of players on the pitch, I think like is massive for the young boys, because we've got a lot of young kids in there that need that kind of they need those leaders and need people to be talking to them on the pitch all the time. But like, I think as the season goes on and as the pitches get better, I think, because we are a team that wants to play football and Tim wants us to you know, get on the ball and play and express ourselves. And like, he wants these young boys to really blossom. So I think as the pitches get that little bit better, it's been tough. Obviously, we know the scenario with Turner's Cross at the moment, where the pitch hasn't been the best, you know, but not just Turner's Cross, some of the pitches away from home, like Finn Harps above was terrible, you know. And like, as the pitches get better and we start moving the ball faster, I think teams won't live with us.
Have you had a chance to watch the women's team, Trish, this season?
I have. I've watched them, yeah. I'd watched a couple of their games, like, yeah. Like, they're doing well, you know.
They started, that defeat to Galway was probably...
But you know what?
It was a wake-up call, maybe,
yes,
was it?
Yes, a wake-up call. And I think, like, they came out then against Wexford, and I think it was like, you know, right, we need to kick on from here. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, they have. Like, I know, like, obviously Danny is pushing them to keep progressing, like, but I only spoke with Danny, like, actually before he came out here, I was only talking to him, and like, that's what we were saying, like, obviously, like, huge improvement on last year already. Like, I think probably a little disappointed with the point up in DLR, because I think they felt they could have won that game, but like, still, like, that's what, like, they're up into, I think it's 7th now, 6th or 7th, like, so I mean, like, obviously getting those results is going to build confidence, and like, which is probably what they need, you know. I mean, obviously last year was a tough season for them, and this year now, like, to be getting, kind of putting the points on the board and moving up the table, the girls are just going to build the confidence from there. And
they brought in a couple of kind of more established players as well, a bit like the men's team, kind of all the players with,
I think they needed that, like, you know. I think, like, I mean, even any time myself and Danny spoke, I've always said to him, I think then that's what they were missing, that little bit. I know now they had like Kira Mack, but like, they needed those kind of two or three more experienced players. Like, if you look at, we'd say the likes of Shells and Piemont, like, you could pick four or five players who've been around the league for a long time, or who have that little bit of experience to help the younger players. And that's, again, like, as Anthony said, what you need in the team, like, someone that can lead on the pitch. And I think with the girls they brought in, they're able to do that, and you can see the improvements straight away.
You've been involved at national level as well with the women's team as well, under.
Yeah, I've worked with the women's teams I've been with the under 14s, 15s, 17s. I've been with the Irish under senior, with the Irish senior team as well, with Noel King. So, women's football, even from when I started, women's football has come on massively.
Huge change over the years.
Oh, it's huge. Even the level that they play at now, I mean, the speed of the game has changed completely. And I go back to again that we spoke about earlier, strength and conditioning side of it as well, even for the women. Like, it's changed massively for the men. And even in the academies now, they're all doing strength and conditioning. And in the women's game, I can see that's improved tenfold as well, you know.
And that's going to create a much stronger league, a great product to watch. And obviously, it's going to help the international team going forward, I'd imagine. I mean, obviously, they've just had their first World Cup. I know they've had a few setbacks recently in terms of the England game and stuff like that, and a tough game against France as well. But you'd imagine as the years progress, we're going, and the under-19s are just qualified for the Euro. So, like...
This is it, you see. Like, I suppose, like, all the other countries had this...
For years.
Mm. Whereas, like we're only getting up to speed now as such. Like, so, like, you can see already, like, the improvements... from just what's been done in the country with regards to women's football, you know what I mean? So, like, it's going to be interesting to see, like, again, the league, like the senior league here is progressing, it's getting better and better. So, like, it's obviously going to turn out better players, and like, it's I think, like, we are going to go from strength to strength.
I know it's getting on television as well, which is even great again, because, you know, for young girls to witness that as well, it's important. To be able to see, yeah, I can aspire to be like that, you know. Role models is what they all need.
Yeah.
And I said to Ciara the last time, probably when you were growing up, there probably wasn't too many role models in the female game, was there?
No, I suppose I always looked up to Emma Byrne.
Because she had played across the water as well.
You know, and she was always, like, obviously from being a goalkeeper, someone that I would have watched and kind of aspired to be like. So, like, she would have been my role model. But now the girls have, like... so many to look up to. Like, you have Denise O'Sullivan, Katie McCabe, you know, like, there you can see the young girls, and like, when they go to the games, they're like, my niece, she's 16 and she's obsessed with Katie McCabe, you know what I mean? So, like, it's great for them to have, yeah, 100%.
And even international figures as well that they can look up to, like, superstars in their own. Like, I'm sure Mary Earps is probably for a young goalkeeper, they're all like looking at her save there in the cup semi-final the other day or whatever. You know, I know it was going viral yesterday online.
It's so, a serious save, to be fair, though.
So that's exactly what you want to see.
Yeah.
And you know, if it was whoever, Alison or Edison or whatever, it would be all over. And it's great to see that she's all over the internet with that save as well. Like,
oh, massively. Like, I mean, I think you even look at her in general, she's a character.
Mm.
You know, she's confident. You know, she's, you can see, you know, she has that little bit about her to be a goalkeeper. You know, she believes in herself. She's not afraid to express herself, you know. I mean, you even see that scenario with the England goalkeeping jersey, I think, wasn't it?
That's
where,
right.
Where she demanded from the sponsor that they start releasing it, and then it sold out in a matter of minutes.
That's right.
So she's got that little bit about her, and
she got personality of the year, the sports personality of the year,
It's great to see that. Like, female sport is progressing into that kind of level as well.
Yeah, and as is, it's about time.
Yeah,
you know that it's getting to that level, and it's only going to get stronger, I'd imagine. You know, you're probably witnessing some talent that you know that are going to burst into the senior team in the next couple of years, yeah?
You can see it. Like, I mean, like, you just, all you have to do is even, like, if you watch the league at all, like, there's a handful of players there you could pick out, and you're saying, like, like even Mangan there for Cork, like, her goal there.
Fantastic.
Like,
goal.
I mean, that's a top finish. Like, I mean, if that was one of their boys, we'd be talking about it for months, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, there's players there that are, you know, they're there or thereabouts, like, and it's going to be good to see them progress.
So exciting times for both sides of the club, and it seems to be the same thing is happening on both sides. It's the younger players emerging all of a sudden that are, I suppose, getting people talking.
Yeah, but I think academies, like at every club nowadays, is where, you know, you're going to get your rewards, you know, by having a good structure in your academy, you know, and bringing those through and working them into the first team. And that's the target for all academies now, is to get them into the first team, you know. And obviously with a club like Cork City, you're hoping that, you know, you get them into the first team, and if they move on and you make a few pound off them, fantastic, you know what I mean? Like, but at the end of the day, we're a professional football club. So, like, we're trying to get them into the first team as soon as we can. And the better they do, the better we do. You know what I mean? So everybody wins, yeah.
And hold on to them as long as we can and hope for the best there you go, at that point.
Yeah.
Well, every week we finish the podcast with a couple of questions. We've got a good few in for me, actually. So the first one goes to you, Trish. What's your favourite footballing memory? Oh. That comes in from Kira, actually.
Kira, oh my God. I suppose getting called up in the Irish under 19 team. As a young girl, I suppose you always aspire to play for your country. Like, so probably that, I would think, yeah.
Yeah, so like putting on the jersey, I'd imagine, is a great experience.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. Like, it's just, you know, it's something that will stick with you forever. Like, so.
Is it the same for you?
What's
your best experience?
Probably winning the league at Waterford, I would think.
Yeah?
Yeah, probably winning the league with Waterford United. Because we were there or thereabouts for about two, three seasons in a row, you know, and we didn't quite get over the line. And then Jimmy McGough came in and he changed things up a little bit, and you know, that's the season we got over the line. But it was, like, I think winning, always, you'll always remember when you win trophies.
What was your favourite save?
Oh, my favourite save. I don't know really. Probably the one in Dundalk the night we won the league. I pulled one out of the top corner. We won the game 1-0. Darren Murphy actually scored a winner that night, and Dundalk battered us, and I just had one of those games where I wasn't getting beaten, you know, but I remember pulling one out of the top corner that night, and that's probably what got us over the line, because if you know yourself, if you lose that one, Finn Harps were very close to us, and I think if we'd lost that one that night, they would have gone ahead of us, but we won that one. I think that save up in O'Reilly Park probably stands out in my head.
What was yours, Trish? What was your favourite save? Any of it stand out?
Oh God. I'm trying to think, to be honest.
Penalty saves or anything like that?
I think I remember the one save that sticks out in my head is up in Castlebar, actually. Again, it was a volley from just inside the 6-yard box. Niall O'Regan was manager at the time, and we were, you know, we'd been struggling for the seasons before that. And we were up in Castlebar, and it just, she volleyed from the 6-yard box, and I just saved it in the bottom corner, but there was only about 2 minutes left. Whoa. And it was it was a nice win.
That sticks in your mind, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a nice win, just especially the fact that like we had been struggling so much to get wins, and Niall was only after coming in as manager, and it kind of kick-started us from there, you know.
And that's awesome. I think you mentioned about a goal like Brad saved City once or twice this season in the last minute of the game.
Oh, they're so important. I go back to it. It comes down to concentration, especially for goalkeepers. Keeping your focus, you could go, as I said, you could go 83, 84, 85 minutes where you have nothing to do.
Yeah, you're just watching again.
That one save that makes a difference. You know what I mean? Like, and it's that one save will give you your 3 points. You know what I mean?
Dara is wondering, what's your favourite part about your job? So we'll go to you first, Anthony.
Oh, my favourite part of my job? Just probably working with the players, you know, getting on the grass every day. Getting on the grass every day and working with the lads and watching the lads progress. Even just taking Brad now, for instance, this year when Brad came in, he was very, you know, very kind of raw, and to see his progression already this season is fantastic. You know, for me, he's pretty one of the best keepers in the league.
Yeah. How about you, Trish?
Just, I suppose, working with the girls and like giving them opportunities that me as a player didn't have, you know what I mean? Mm. So just being able to go in and help them progress and hopefully help them start a career in the sport, like.
Who else have we? So who's the better keeper? No, that's a tricky question. Who do they say at home? Who does your brother think is the better keeper of the two of you?
Well, I'm going to say me.
Of course, I'm going to say you.
I always say put your medals on the table. You know what I mean? So
I'll say me, and my husband will agree with me as well, because if he doesn't, he'll get in trouble.
He's out. So it's a draw, that one. It's a tricky question, though, yeah. To be fair. Auntie, this is a tricky one for you. Now, someone wants to know, what would be your thoughts on last year's goalkeeping situation? We had a couple of keepers.
We had a couple of keepers. I just think the scenario that happened at the start of the season with Toby getting injured, not getting injured, but he came with the injury, you know. So if you think about it, like, he came in, he was going to be our number one, and obviously he got injured, came with a groin injury. We had to send him back to Celtic, and then Jimmy had been there from the year before, mm-hmm. you know. It was a tough one then for Jimmy. Obviously, Jimmy was hoping to play. So then we had to work on Jimmy's confidence again, you know, because obviously he had been stepped over, and, you know, trying to get Jimmy his head back in the right place. And to be fair, Jimmy done well in games, and he's the first to admit he'd made mistakes, you know what I mean? Like, but we have to realise as well, Jimmy's a very, very young goalkeeper. Jimmy's only 21 years of age as well.
Yeah.
And I think people, because Jimmy played international and he was kind of a little bit known from some of them international games, people forget how young Jimmy is, you know.
Which is even younger for a goalkeeper as well, in general,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, so like, and that's what I'm saying with Jimmy. Like, I still think Jimmy will have a good career. But like, people have to realise what age he is, and he is going to make mistakes when you're a younger goalkeeper, you know, especially at that level. You know, it's tough. It's not an easy level to play at, especially in a team that wasn't doing well. You know what I mean? So a goalkeeper's going to get exposed very quickly. And then the other scenario, we brought in the two lads from England, and what's his name? My head's gone blank. What's his name? Broke his foot up in Pats. Tiernan Brooks broke his foot up in Pats. After about 20 minutes into the game, he got a ball back to him and took a heavy touch, and your man clattered him and he broke his foot. So then we were in a scramble again straight away, and we had to get another goalkeeper in, and we brought in Ollie. And to be honest about it, I think Ollie done very well. I thought Ollie was very steady when he got in, and he did improve us when he got into the team. I think Ollie's kicking was fantastic, and he was a dominant presence in the box, you know. So there wasn't a whole lot between him and Tiernan. Tiernan was just very unlucky.
And I'd imagine that cause, like, the change of keepers was probably a bit unstable for the defence, because they're trying to get used to a goalkeeper. Like, it's the one position you nearly expect the same person to be in all the time, is it?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, as I said, like, it was a tough one for Jimmy, because some games went his way, some games didn't, you know. And I do feel that when Ollie got in the team, I do think we were lots more steady at the back. And, you know, we really kind of showed that we could survive in the Premier Division a little bit better, you know. So, yeah, it was a tough season, and all the lads were great to work with. But for me, it's you need experience in that position, especially in the Premier Division.
Trish, is it true that you have more clean sheets than Anthony?
100%, yeah.
No chance.
That came without in from Shea, no.
No chance.
Without a doubt. Yeah, definitely. You see, he played so long ago, he can't remember.
No chance.
We'd have to get some statistician or something to work out how many clean sheets.
There wasn't stats when he played, you see.
It's too bad. All the stats from long ago are gone.
Yeah, it's very harsh.
Listen, thanks a million for coming in. It's been fantastic to hear about your careers, but also to hear how you're nurturing the players now currently, and best luck for the rest of the season.
No, well, it was a pleasure to come in, lads.
Thanks for having us.
Hope we didn't bore you to death.
Well, that was different anyway. What do you think of that?
I enjoyed the sibling rivalry there towards the end about the who's the better keeper debate and the clean sheets debate.
Yeah, surely.
A bit of bite to that, like.
So, surely there's somebody out there now, stats person, that could tell us which one had the most clean sheets in League of Ireland football. Like.
Yeah, we were looking for stats on Damien Delaney a few weeks ago, and Jerry Desmond had stats. So, Jerry, if you're listening and you've got stats on the Fenleys, get in touch, and we'll put that debate to bed in next week's episode if we have them.
I think we'll have to get Jerry in another occasion to maybe do a stats episode of stats for the club or something.
Jerry would be an incredible guest on this. So if there is any interest there, Jerry, we'd be delighted to have you.
Yeah, but I think people will enjoy that. You know, to hear that both of them took up the game quite late.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And like Anthony was saying, he started at 11 and next thing he's in the League of Ireland set up at 16.
He was on trial at Man City at 14. He was only after taking up. He's playing Gaelic football for Vincent.
That's some route into football, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Like, it's amazing. It just goes to show that, many ways, like, it's never too late to take something. Maybe it's that freshness in goalkeeping as well.
Yeah.
And both of them went straight in as goalkeepers. And, like, Dave Moore's mother managed to get Trish to go on goal for Douglas Hall. You know, like,
yeah,
it's just like,
it's brilliant, isn't it?
Just from being at the side of the pitch. Are you interested in being a goalkeeper? You know what?
Yeah. And we said it last week when we had Mick in. A kitman's perspective on it is a bit of a different one, but like Fenner's as the goalkeeper coach and Trish as the under-19s manager and previously a player, again, it's a different perspective to hearing from a player, a current player, or hearing from just a manager like we'd be so used to, and everyone is so used to. Yeah, we enjoyed it, so we hope everyone else enjoyed that as well.
I think people will enjoy that. You know, and as you said, it's a different perspective on the club. Anything else happening outside the club at the moment? The foot golf, how are the sales going for that?
The foot golf, it's filling up, yeah. There's a bit of feedback that people thought it was families only, but it's open to everyone. We kind of called it a family fun day just to entice families as well, rather than just
because it's an event where kids could come, whereas they can't, obviously.
Exactly, look, anyone can play in it.
Yeah.
Whether it's a work group of work colleagues or a couple of lads or a couple of girls, whatever it is, I'm going to try and get my buddies to play in it and we'll see how that goes, and hopefully we won't be the worst team there on the day, but we'll see.
I'll see if my ankle is holding up close.
we'll enter a podcast team, yeah.
Go ahead.
But yeah, on the road now Saturday. I know it's another busy Saturday because there's two away games. The women are away to Shells in the All-Ireland Cup at 2 o'clock in Talca Park, and then the men are on at 7:30 against Longford.
Are you going to try and get the boat?
I'm actually away this weekend because we were originally meant to be playing Longford on the Friday, and there was no women's fixture in the calendar because the All-Ireland Cup hadn't been decided on yet.
Okay.
So I booked a trip away for the weekend. So my trip away has now become a busy Saturday where I'll be in the hotel on my laptop. But that's the joys of it, isn't it?
It's the joys of being there.
I am getting an FA Cup semi-final in on Sunday though, so it's not going to be the worst weekend.
So you're going to London?
Going to London for the weekend, yeah.
See, United and Coventry, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to get other tickets for the other semi-final for the Saturday, but now I have two Cork City matches to do instead. So just get to watch it from afar.
Yeah, I hope it's a nice hotel room. That's good Wi-Fi.
So do I.
Apologies in advance. Like
apologies in advance if the tweets are a couple of minutes behind on Saturday, yeah, but I'll blame LOI TV.
He deserves a bit of leeway. I know he's doing a great job for us, so yeah, take it easy on him if the results are a bit slow coming in. But yeah, you'd expect us to do well. No, Longford have just changed manager. I know Stephen Henderson.
They have. Yeah, they announced that the other night, and they've obviously had a disappointing start to the season that they won't have been happy with. I think they're playing tonight.
That's right, they are.
So we'll see how that game goes.
A rearranged game against Wexford, isn't it?
Yeah. They had a couple of rearranged games. They hadn't played for weeks at one point. Yeah, their interim management team will be in charge tonight, and we'll see how that one goes. So all eyes will be on that tonight.
Yeah, the one thing you have to be careful of that. No, thankfully, we're not the first game with this new management team.
You always hear about the bounce. The bounce. Hopefully the bounce comes tonight and we can win on Saturday.
It does seem to happen.
It always does.
You know, whatever it is, I think just maybe it's players trying to prove it to the new manager as well.
Possibly. So hopefully that happens tonight. And then we can come out on top on Saturday. Exactly, yeah. One thing actually we haven't really mentioned on the pods the last couple of weeks is the team of the week coming out. We've had players in team of the week every week.
That's right.
Greg Bulger was in this week. And Heidi Mackin was in the women's team of the week, so that's brilliant. We announced the player of the month as well for March.
Cahill got player of the month.
Cahill got it for the men's first team, and Niamh Cotter got it for the women's first team. No idea how Niamh Cotter hasn't been in a league team of the week so far. She has been immense, but she's been recognised with the player of the month for the club anyway, which is good. And it's always nice to see the players recognised like that when performances have been deserving of it.
Yeah, I know, definitely. And you know what? It's nice. They're nice little wins.
Especially
for the younger players, I think.
Yeah.
Give them a little boost.
And it's a nice way, the way we do it on social media as well, getting our own supporters to vote on it, letting people have their say rather than the media picking it or someone else.
Yeah, getting two or three pundits or whatever to pick it. No, let the public, because that's what they do in most leagues now, actually.
Yeah.
For the player of the month, they maybe shortlist the category and then let people vote.
Yeah. And there's always a good reaction to it as well, which is good. And it stirs up debate sometimes when a couple of players have been good. Mm. So
I see a lot of debate over the teams of the week, not our teams, but
the teams
general,
of the week.
Because people are saying, are they watching the matches? You know, I just see things like that.
They're the most polarising things ever, particularly in the women's league. It's always funny, I have the notifications on and I see them post the team of the week and I'm straight to the replies because I know within minutes there's people arguing in the replies. But yeah, that's great entertainment on a Monday or Tuesday when they go.
I was going to get that happening anyway.
Once there's at least one Cork City player in there, I don't mind. Once you get some bit of representation.
So yeah, so look, that's another round of away fixtures. Obviously, we should have had a home fixture this weekend, but look.
Yeah, and next week. Next week is reversed as well.
So 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, that's the latest we have on that. So just over the next couple of weeks.
Just keep an eye on the website, keep an eye on everything. And
exactly. As soon as we have news, we'll bring it to you.
Hopefully we'll be back to the cross soon.
Hopefully. Absence made the heart grow fonder, as you said earlier, so we want to go back.
Definitely.
We'll love it when we get back.
I'd say it'll be a sellout nearly when we get back.
Hopefully.
In the meantime, enjoy your trip away and hopefully just two wins while you're in your hotel room.
I'll have a wild Saturday night. But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with another guest. And yeah, if you haven't already, we've nearly forgot the Spotify question for this week.
What is the Spotify question? Would it be the best save you've ever seen?
The best save, or what about, make it broader, your favourite Cork City goalkeeper?
Oh yeah, that could be the best.
Because we've had David Harrington in recent years, Mark McNulty and Mick Devine had both long spells. Yeah, that could be a good one now.
Yeah, there's been a few.
Yeah, that's this week's one. So who's been your favourite Cork City
goalkeeper? Yeah,
men or women's team, let us know that. And as always, leave a rating. Follow us on Spotify if you haven't
already. Press that subscribe button.
Exactly, every little helps.
And tell people about it, share it as well.
Exactly, give us a retweet, share it on your Instagram story, whatever it is. Facebook.
And if you have any suggestions, send us a message.
Exactly, yeah, send us a message privately or send us a tweet.
That you'd like to hear, because I know there was a few people said that last week after Mick that they'd love to hear other people from behind the scenes in the club as well, which was actually great to hear, you know,
because that's what we want.
Players like, yeah.
We don't, as great as it is to have access to the players and stuff, we shouldn't be limited to just that. We have the whole club to pick from. So let's get people in when we can. So if you have any other requests of people to go more in depth with, be it staff members, volunteers, past staff members, whatever it is, send it in and we'll do our best.
Yeah. Well, until next week, we see you then.
See you next week.